telling her that they'd watched as she popped into the laced filigree of her bra and drew on the silk, soft, white, tight little pants after her shower. Or possibly it was just Bex, unprepared for many pairs of eyes wheeling on her, a stranger, in that morning dining room. Again, she felt the chill of doubt and the horror of despair. For no reason at all, she recalled breakfasting in a hotel in Cambridge with Charlie, who had taken her there for a weekend of long walks and strolls around the colleges. They'd bought some old prints, and she now wondered what had become of them. That had been a year ago, and she was conscious of her bewilderment at thinking of the incident now. The others glanced toward her, then away, hanging for a split second in silence. Then the room relaxed again, and the chatter was resumed. A dark, tousle-haired waiter, all hands and teeth, and a little woman's waist, descended on her like a shark, deftly picking up the words rolls, coffee, preserves, and swinging away with a series of gestures, waiter's semaphore, to one of the juniors, instructing coffee to be brought, as he dropped a basket of rolls and croissants lightly onto the table. Bex cracked a roll, smelled the soft yeast wonder of the bread, thought to hell with weight, and poured the strawberry jam thick on the butter, bowed her head in gluttony, and savoured the sinful delights. The coffee came, and she, to use her own thoughts, hoovered it up. Then, raising her head and reaching for a second roll, she saw the schoolmarmish woman rise from her table and plod toward the doors. She had that outflung bust and bottom that makes a female look completely off balance, somehow freakish, an S-shape with legs. Bex glanced away as the woman reached the double doors, then back again. She had disappeared, but the doors swung open again to reveal Tessa Murray in black leggings and a navy blue thigh-length jacket, all hanging strings, toggles and such, over a white stylish cambric shirt, like a tabard. Bex first thought that Tessa looked medieval, with one hand stuffed into the big black leather bag swinging from her shoulder. Then she saw Tessa's eyes lock with her own, froze as she saw the lips move, head turning a fraction as the padrone asked if he could help, saw him nod, smile, gesture, and watched with a momentary sensation of hopelessness. Tessa Murray was heading for her, straight as a cruise missile, and she thought just about as dangerous. Bex pulled herself out of the few seconds of fear, mentally shook herself like a shaggy old dog, heavy with rain and mud. She half rose. "Sit down." Tessa flapped a hand in front of her. "You either know who I am or you don't. That doesn't matter. Shake hands. I'm talking to you. Think of the fuss you'll cause if you don't act naturally." Bex felt the girl's hand very strong in hers and sensed that she was being physically assaulted. Pain slid angrily through her fingers, almost cracking, as the other woman gripped Bex's hand as though in a vice. "Just listen to me," Tessa hissed. Her voice was not over-pleasant. Bex registered that she had the marked accent of Northern Ireland. "Just ye listen to me." A female version of Ian Paisley on an irritating day. "I have a pistol in the bag, my hands on it, and I have a finger wrapped around the trigger. I'll not hesitate. I'll use it." "What the?" Bex began, sounding even to herself like someone wrongly identified. "Don't know who you are," Tessa continued, unrelenting, sharp. "Don't much care. But you were on the plane coming into Bern. You stayed at the same hotel as I did. Then you were on the train to Locarno with me. And you turned up here last night. Followed me to the villa where I'm staying. Could be a coincidence. Don't know. But we have to talk with you. Right?" Tessa was smiling as though Bex were an old friend. Bex smiled back. "Get the fuck out." In the back of her mind, she sought out the answer to how she could and should react. If I weren't a copper, she pondered, how would I behave? If I were totally innocent, what would I do? Tess smiled back charmingly. "I really mean it." Teeth gritted in a ventriloquist's grimace. "If you don't stand up and come with me, I'll just gun you down. My brother's waiting at the villa. Now, are you ready?" "I want to swallow the rest of my coffee." pick up the cup and get her full in the face with scalding Colombian brew, she decided, before the reality took over, and her old instructor whispered in her ear, "Never put innocent people at risk. If there's any chance of Chummy pulling a trigger, make sure there are no members of Joe Public about. Worst PR job in the world. Some suit or anorak taking a risk that puts Joe up as a target.
Touch your cup, and half of your stomach goes. Just stand up quietly, nod in a friendly way, and walk toward the door, okay?"
Slowly Beck stood up, pushing her chair back and putting a little distance between her and the edge of the table. She nodded, a curt bob of the head, and again the old instructor, the little nut-brown man, told her, "They usually make a fatal mistake with handguns. Sometimes they move in too close. Never try it if they're 2 paces or more away. Disarming a jumpy idiot with a gun's only feasible when they're up close."
"Turn around and start walking."
Tessa smiled and nodded. There was no option.
"And please, don't even think about heroics. I really would prefer to settle this quietly."
Bex nodded again, smiled at the padrone, and hesitated just long enough to rule out any move at the doors. In the bare, functional hotel foyer, she turned toward the main exit, and so passed out onto the lakefront. The fresh morning sat up and slapped her in the face. People waited for the ferry, a group of some 10 or 11 folk, two of the girls in national costume, a nun who looked incredibly happy, and a priest hobbled with age and gleaming with holiness. In Switzerland, it is always busy on Sundays. Bex felt the chill passing through her clothes and wondered if she could get lost in a crowd between here and the villa. No way, she decided. She felt 2 large drops of sweat detach themselves from her armpit and splatter against her ribcage. Fear scuttled through her stomach and inched its way up her neck, into her hair, creeping, dangerous. Her hand moved to her head, scratching, back muscles moving, squirming. Immediately she increased speed in the hope that Tess would try to catch up and so give her the advantage. She glanced over her right shoulder and saw the girl remained a good 5 or 6 paces behind.
"Where do you want me to go? I don't understand. Just go the way you went when we got off the ferry last night, up the slope to the road, and then turn left."
People were out and about, but not in large numbers. For the most part, they wore Sunday clothes, because in this part of the world they still did that. Catholic countries seemed to remain constant, while the Protestant lands appeared to have dissolved into myth, legend, disbelief, and the more outrageous demands made by specialist shops dealing in fairies, stones, sacred groves, sentimental Victorian angels, and the whole hodgepodge of New Age quasi-religious mumbo-jumbo. Tessa stayed a careful 5 paces behind Bex, who felt it was no accident that Tessa had come for her at this hour in the morning. A couple of times Bex thought about making a run for it, crossing the road between cars just slowing as they came into Brissago from the direction of Italy. It was never safe, though, and she again tried the dodge of speeding up. Tessa Mare stayed on station, and Bex thought that in the end it would be best to bluff it out. She had nothing on her that would lead them back to the police, she was sure of that, so she slowed her walk, glancing behind her.
"Where exactly do you want me to go?" "Just keep walking. I told you my brother's waiting for us at the villa."
"Brother?" Bex thought. Then aloud asked,
"Which villa?" "The one you walked past last night."
"I walked up here to a cafe. I had coffee there, up here on the right, across the road." Tess came closer, but not nearly close enough.
"Keep going,"
she urged quietly, and Bex remembered Tess's high-stepping giraffe walk of the previous evening. The terracotta rooftop of the villa was just visible behind a stand of cypresses. In the distance, a promontory of land fingered into the lake. Far ahead, about 1 kilometre down the road, lay the tobacco factory and the frontier post. On the far side of the road, cars had pulled off, and children ran around the trees or stood, staring into the cold blue sky. Bex remembered a moment in the movie of the musical Oliver, where young Oliver Twist sings a song from a window about a beautiful morning, the camera walking London streets under just such a sky.